Hello, welcome to The Sound of Economics from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. My name is Sean Gibson, I'm Bruegel's press officer, and I'm here with one of our senior fellows, Scholt Davas, for another instalment of the Deep Focus series, looking at the key elements of Bruegel's research in conversation with the authors. Hello, Scholt.
Hello.
So our subject today is European cohesion policy. And that's something that you, Scholt, have co-written a Bruegel policy contribution about with Jan Matzer and Katharina Midoich, based on a study that you originally prepared for the European Parliament's Committee on Budgetary Control. So this paper basically is focused on improving cohesion policy in Europe. Can we possibly begin with the question of why cohesion policy is important?
First of all, the European treaties specify that one of the key objectives of the European Union is to strengthen regional cohesion, and in particular to help the most disadvantaged, most backward regions. But certainly there is a rationale for this treaty-based objective. I would say there are social, political, and also economic rationales. I mean, the most obvious social rationale is that equality is a very important social concept. So, I mean, the European Union should function much better if there are no major inequalities between people living in very poor areas and other people living in very rich areas. Also, I have to add that a socially more cohesive EU is also politically more cohesive, which is also an important aspect. Another political issue is that the enlargement to South and East Europe in the 1980s to Southern Europe and in the 2000s to Eastern Europe can also be a kind of political bargain whereby these newer member states, which were less developed, open their markets for investment, trade, capital for Western European countries. And at the same time, Western European countries agreed that labor might migrate from, let's say, from the East to the West. And they also agreed to provide some funding for convergence of these regions. But there are also certainly economic arguments, which makes a very strong rationale for a cohesion policy. And that's related to market integration. We can also look at a single country like Germany, France, I mean, any large country. What we can see is that the activities and also people tend to concentrate in regions within a country, which are, you know, offer much better prospect and standards of living. So people would migrate from poorer areas of, let's say, France to Paris or also within Germany. And it also applies to the whole European Union. So when we have a single market, then certain areas of the single market are doing much better, and people tend to go there. Now, the big question, what to do with the other regions, which are left by the people? And the idea of cohesion policy is not to provide a kind of compensation to the losers, but instead help these countries to build infrastructure, to improve their research and development capacities, their administrative capacities. So basically improve the conditions for economic growth. And if these more disadvantaged regions improve their fundamental conditions for growth, then perhaps fewer people leave, or even they might be able to attract other people.
So this sounds possibly like quite a basic question, but why must cohesion policy be improved? And it sort of says something about where we are, that you're arguing for an improvement of it.
Cohesion policy takes a very large share in the European Union budget. In the current 7-year budget, it accounts for about 1/3 of total EU spending, so it's a very, very big spending item. But if we look at the research on the effectiveness of cohesion policy, then we find very mixed results. Some research papers conclude that cohesion policy is very, very good. It improves economic growth, investment, technology, and so on. There are other papers which conclude that, yes, cohesion policy helps the regions to grow, but only temporarily, and once cohesion payments is withdrawn because the region developed at a higher level and cohesion money doesn't come anymore at such an extent, then the region basically falls back to where it was before. And there are also economic research which concludes that basically cohesion policy has no impact at all, and some might also find adverse impacts. And, you know, I think it's a big question that there's a very large research. We identify more than 1,000 papers trying to estimate the impact and effectiveness of cohesion policy, and there's a disagreement. So clearly, the academic literature disagrees on whether cohesion policy can able to and whether it actually delivers its goal. So I think there isn't a lot of scope for analysis and improvements. And there are also many, many papers making various suggestions on how to improve. And I do think that indeed there is a scope for further improvements.
Now, you've touched on that there, that there's a huge volume of assessments of the EU's cohesion policy. I wonder if you could elaborate on what some of the problems there are in measuring the effectiveness of cohesion policy and how your method in this Bruegel policy contribution hopes to account for some of these problems.
A very important problem is that cohesion policy works in a very complex local environment. I mean, each region have their own specificity. Cohesion policy also interacts with national policies and regional policies by the local communities. There are multiplicity of various measures, local rules and systems, which also influence how cohesion policy can achieve its goal. There are also cohesion policy projects have very different time frames. Many of them are going at the same time. So it's difficult to disentangle which effect is due to which policy measures. There are also spillovers. For example, if there is a very prosperous big investment in a neighboring region, then also its neighbors can, you know, benefit from that. And maybe the neighboring region received investment from a private company, the region under question received investment from cohesion policy. And it could be that the region under question improves, not because of cohesion policy investment in that region, but because of this big private firm established a big factory in the neighboring region, and thereby through supply change, they involve a lot of local stakeholders. So all of these regional specificities make it very, very difficult to identify the impact of cohesion policy. But there are, of course, also some difficulties related to the methodology. And I would say there are three major types of methodologies which are used. One is when someone uses a big macroeconomic model and simulates the impact of the intervention like cohesion policy. But the problem with that is that the result we will get from the simulations will basically reflect the assumptions we make. For example, if we assume that cohesion policy improves the productivity of the region, if it increases the capital stock of the region, and if it upgrades the labor by, you know, offering education and training, and we put these assumptions to a macroeconomic model, then obviously we receive the result that cohesion policy helps the development of the region. But this is not a proof. This is just reflects the assumptions that we have made. The second major type of methodology uses a so-called counterfactual method. So basically, these works try to estimate how the region would have developed without cohesion funding. But the big, big problem with this methodology is that you have to establish a credible counterfactual scenario how the region would have developed without cohesion funding. And that's extremely difficult. And the third methodology, which are more empirical in nature, which, for example, uses some so-called regression methodology, so they put in some input variables like cohesion spending and some output or result indicators like GDP growth, and they try to use econometric methods to estimate the impact. These methods are certainly useful, but they're also subject to a number of difficulties. I mean, I don't want to go into technical details. Let me just mention one very basic fact, is omitting important variables from the regression. I already mentioned that there are so many local factors which influence the outcome of cohesion policy, but many of these local factors are not measurable. I mean, again, let me mention another one, for example, the quality of governments, the quality of the local institutions which implement cohesion policy. Now, certain regions which have much more effective local governance, we could expect that those regions are able to better make use of cohesion policy. But there are practically no indicators measuring that. And if we omit this indicator and other relevant indicators, then basically their impact is somewhere mixed or lost in the regression. And again, the result we get might not really reflect the true impact. So unfortunately, all kinds of methodologies which have been used in the literature are subject to major problems. And for this reason, with my co-authors, Jan and Katarina, we designed a new methodology, namely that we do not aim to estimate the impact of cohesion policy per se, but what we try to do is to identify which are the European Union regions which are performing better and worse compared to a benchmark. This is the first step of our method. And in the second step, we look at what are the characteristics of cohesion policy projects in, let's say, the best performing regions and the worst performing regions. In the first step of the analysis, identifying which are the good and bad performing regions, what we use is we used economic theory, which provides some guidance on what factors can contribute to economic growth. For example, capital stock improve, the quality of labor improve, the share of urban-rural development could contribute, because typically urban areas grow faster than rural areas and so on. And we controlled for about 10 of such determinants of economic growth. And after controlling for that, we obtained a ranking of the European Union regions. We used data for about 1,300 European Union regions, and then looked at which are the best performing ones and which are the worst performing ones. And then we looked at, in the second step, as I already mentioned, the characteristics of cohesion policy projects and programs. For example, how long they are, how they are financed, who are the beneficiaries, and so on.
So, moving to the real crux of the study and your particular findings in this case. Now we've talked about some of the methodology. What did you conclude would be some of the best ways to implement cohesion policy in the EU?
We reached a number of conclusions. Let me first highlight maybe the three most important conclusions and mention a couple of others. I think the one of the three most important conclusions is that the goal of cohesion policy should be clearly to achieve results. Now, it's very easy to say that, because obviously the goal of every policy, not just cohesion policy, but every policy, is to reach results. But one of the problems of cohesion policy in the past years was that in order to foster the achievements of results, each programs now are subject to a numerical measurement criteria, where it is called the so-called performance framework, which includes a number of indicators, numerical indicators. And in order to demonstrate that the project has made progress, those numerical indicators have to improve or reach certain targets. Let me give you a few examples. For example, for an infrastructure development project, a key indicator is what is the length of the road built. So you can say that if you build, 200 kilometers of road, then the result is reached. But the problem is that if we measure the results by the length of roads built, then this is certainly a perfect measure for implementation. So if the target was to build 200 kilometers and we build that, we have implemented it. But the problem is that building 200 kilometers of roads doesn't really mean that we address the underlying problem of the region. For example, if the problem was that, people spend too much time on commuting, then if you just build a road, we might not, improve on that, because maybe the road is not in the best place for people to use, or the road may be still overcrowded. And it's also possible that the commuting time of people have not really been reduced. Or, for example, another example, we can also calculate very easily the number of schools built. If the goal was to build 15 schools in a certain city, and we build 15 schools, then, we can be assured that, yes, we have implemented the program. But again, whether building that 15, schools was indeed the main help for the region, that's certainly another question. Maybe the problem of that region is that people are moving away, emigrating. So maybe the problem is the quality of lack of opportunities for parents to find good jobs. And with the schooling system, maybe the problem is a lack of well-qualified teachers. So if you just measure the number of schools built, it's not necessarily ensures that the ultimate objectives or the ultimate goals for which the cohesion policy intervention was made in the first place has been reached. So for this to achieve that, what is absolutely important and perhaps the most important part of cohesion policy is planning. So regions will have to come up with development plans, and those development plans will have to demonstrate very, very clearly what are the main problems of the regions, what are the problems the region would like to solve, and then derive from that the policy measures and the interventions, whether building road or teaching or training the teachers and so on. So based on this underlying need, they have to derive the concrete steps which will be actually implemented. And this part of the process needs improvement. So this was my first of the three critical issues. The second, which came very clearly from our research, is that regions which had longer duration projects and also which had more focused projects, they done better than regions which had shorter projects and less focused projects. Now, we interpret these results that strategic projects are important, because if you have fewer and longer duration projects, then by definition, they have to be more forward-looking, more strategically planned. So the second key recommendation is that cohesion policy should focus on big and long-term fundamental projects instead of having millions of small minor projects, which are also much more difficult to foresee. And the third major recommendation we make is that interregional projects bring lots of benefits. Under interregional projects, we mean, and not just we, but the general literature means that more than one region participates. It can be more than one region from one country, but also can be regions from different countries. And the research has demonstrated very clearly that those regions which participate in interregional projects tend to perform better than those regions which don't participate. And I mean, so this is the result, empirical result. The rest is our interpretation. And we interpret this result as suggesting that, you know, if more regions work together, then, you know, there's a knowledge exchange. For example, less developed regions or regions which have weaker administrative capacity, they see how more developed regions or regions with better administrative capacity actually work, so they can learn from each other and cooperate with each other. So I think interregional projects are very useful, and they should be explored to a much greater extent in the forthcoming years. And as I said, we have many, many other recommendations, but maybe I would stop here, because it would take quite some time to list them all.
Well, no, thank you for talking us through some of those results, and definitely we've also talked about some of the improvements that have to be targeted. But I guess it's good to also focus, if we can, on what obstacles you might foresee that will prevent us from improving cohesion policy in the coming years.
The major issue is political, in my view, because cohesion policy is always planned for the European Union's 7-year budget, which is called Multiannual Financial Framework. The current one will end in 2020, and the next one will run from 2021 to 2027. And this multiannual financial framework will have to be approved by unanimous decisions of all European Union member states. But this multiannual financial framework is not only about cohesion policy, but it's about everything: the agricultural policy, research, defense, migration, student mobility, and so on. And different countries have very different interests in the different spending areas. And typically what happens is that those countries that are beneficiaries of a particular program, they typically insist that those programs should be kept and try to block changes. And this applies to all spending items of the EU budget, and also applies to the cohesion policy in particular, which, as I said, accounts for about one third. So those countries which benefited greatly from cohesion policy, they, you know, try to keep both not just the amount unchanged, but also some of the modalities. By those countries which are net contributors, and also some of them are also skeptical about the usefulness of this policy, or they worry about corruption and improper use of these EU funds, they try to push these spending downs and impose much more, you know, checks in order to ensure that indeed the money will not be a subject for corruption. So all of these different differences between EU member states will make it very, very difficult to make meaningful changes. Now, some compromise will be reached at the end, I trust, because the EU budget is always has been always approved, and I believe it will be also approved this time. It's another question when this will happen, but I think at a point in time they will approve. It will be approved. The big question certainly is how much change that will involve compared to the current regulations for cohesion policy. And also after the multi-annual financial framework, including the modalities of the cohesion policy approved, then, you know, comes the problems on the ground, namely how member states and regions can manage these EU funds. So basically the national administrative capacity becomes a crucial issue. Another possible obstacle is also relates to the business model of certain companies, because in those areas where a lot of EU money is paid out, then the business model of some companies is basically built on obtaining as much EU fund as possible. So they don't look at what are the good long-term profitable opportunities which would, you know, help the region to grow, but they look at, you know, now there is a tender, I want to go for it because I would get a lot of EU funding. So, so as I said, first big challenge is to approve and to, I mean, within the approval process, to try to ensure that cohesion policy will have a better regulation in the next 7 years. But after approved, a lot will depend on how it is implemented locally, and certainly that will determine the success of cohesion policy in the next multi-annual financial framework.
Well, that about brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks for joining us for another Deep Focus, and thank you, Jean, for taking me through your work. If you'd like to take in some more of Bruegel's work, you can find all of our publications, our blog posts, and our podcast episodes on our website at www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again on The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.